So when I said velvet.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least we got the fuck ups out of the way early.
My thing.
Oh, fuck. I set on the dog's goal.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I, who am I again? Oh, yeah, I'm the horror nerd, Todd Struch.
I hadn't had his coffee yet. I had to check the security badge from work to find my name out. Jesus.
And the mental deterioration continues.
Yes, it does. It really does. Jesus. So I had a dream a few days ago.
Oh, God.
And
go horribly awry, folks.
No, it's not going to go horribly awry, I don't think, anyway. But in the dream, I had an idea for the first scene of a movie, and it was actually really good. This woman goes into a doctor for whatever reason. I think in the dream she had a broken arm or something wrong with her arm, and so he's examining it and he says, excuse me, I'll be right back. And so she's just waiting in the doctor's office for him to come back, and he arrives and he has an axe behind his back. He had gone out to get an axe, and you just see him raise up the axe, and as he's swinging it down, it fades to black. And in my dream, I'm thinking, oh, that's really good. So I wrote it down, and then I messaged you on Messenger. This is how real the dream was. I distinctly remember messaging you on my phone in the dream about this particular scene, and you replying back, oh, that sounds cool. And then I woke up from it. And I, you know, the oddest thing for me about the dream was just that I remember texting you, you know. It's like, and I remember looking at my screen, you know, and doing the swipe and whatnot. And I'm like, you know, for all the things to remember in a dream, you know, texting you of all people.
Right.
You know. But it was a really cool scene in my head. So I when I woke up, I did write it down. So that's going to appear in something. I'm not sure what.
All right. Interesting. Every once in a while, that'll happen. And I really should get into the habit of writing stuff down like that. Because I'll wake up from a dream and I'll be like, oh, that was really cool. That might make a good idea for a movie or a short story or something. And I'm I'll remember. And I go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope, I have no idea.
Nope. Yeah, well, I did go back to sleep. But when I finally got up, I did remember it. So I did write it down then. And that does, it's very, very rare that it happens that I get an idea for something in my dreams. So I suppose that's my subconscious telling me, hey, asshole, this is going to be good. Write this shit down.
Yeah, exactly.
So I finally listened to my subconscious for a change and did write it down.
Excellent.
I don't know what's going to come of it, but aside from the idea I had about the haunted apartment house in a big city for the next book, I've always had the idea of doing an homage to the 80s slasher movies. And I've had a couple of ideas that I started and didn't quite come out the way that I was wanting it to, so I kind of threw them in the junk drawer, so to speak. But this beginning just really kind of intrigues me. So I think I don't know when I'll get to it, probably after this haunted apartment thing. But I'm kind of excited about it because, you know, I do like my slasher movies. I don't watch them as much as I used to. Because I find the older I get, the more squeamish I get.
You know, it's funny you mention that. I was having a discussion yet again. It's a familiar topic that I have online with people. And I don't know why I allow myself to get drawn in, because most of these Facebook horror groups are all the same. And, you know, a lot of people are just stuck in the 80s. And I will always have a love for my like 70s and 80s slasher films. But they do get very repetitive, you know.
They do.
And formulaic and boring. And every once in a while, something new will come along, you know. So it, for me, it's not like, oh, I got more squeamish. It's like, I got bored, you know.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, it certainly follows the formula. I know they pretty much patterned it after Halloween and Friday the 13th. But the original Friday the 13th, that was more of a mystery because you didn't know who was doing the killing.
Right, right.
You know, so that, you know, that was a little bit different. And that's what I enjoyed about the original one so much, is you just didn't know. You know, once they introduced Jason in the second one, you know, it just became less interesting because you knew who was killing him. And you just kind of assume he's going to come back in the next movie, no matter how it looks like he dies in this one. So, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or unless you can always go off the rails like they did with Halloween. Excuse me. And have some kind of a fucking cult and shit.
Well, yeah. That, yeah. And yet, there are Halloween apologists that will trip over themselves trying to justify all of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I always say, no. You are allowed to say that you still like the movies and at the same time acknowledge that it's pretty fucking stupid, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I don't care that you like the franchise, you know? just admit it. It's like people who are diehard Marvel people or diehard Star Wars people. I have one very good friend who was a diehard Star Wars guy, just like almost to like a religious level. And I tell him all the time, dude, it's okay to say that some of the movies and some of the TV shows are not good. I'm a Star Trek guy, always more so than Star Wars. And even I can admit that some of the shows and some of the movies were terrible. You know, Star Trek 5 is not a good movie. I mean, it's not. You know, I'm not going to make excuses for a bad movie just because I feel the need to defend Star Trek. You know, I must defend Gene Roddenberry's honor at all costs.
That's right.
I just find it funny, like these apologists, you know, for certain things.
Yeah, to somehow people get in their mind that if they like something, then it has to be good. And, you know, that's just not the case. Like we talked about, or I talked about last week with The Flash. You know, I can say it's not a good movie on an objective level, but that still doesn't stop me from enjoying the fuck out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm never going to reconcile that in my brain, but... But seriously, like if you liked it, you liked it. I'm not going to, I wouldn't even spend time arguing that. You know what I mean? So,
well, I got the same type of reaction from my coworker, Chris. He and I have become kind of friends. And he had listened to the podcast because he was curious about the movies that we chose, and he'd never heard it before. And I came into work the day after I posted it, Tuesday, and I hadn't even gotten my sweatshirt off. And he looks at me and he says, "The fucking Flash."
Oh, that's great. So I'm not the only one. Okay.
And I looked at him and I said, "Yeah, fight me for it."
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
All right, so we have a couple of deaths this week.
We do. So the first one, I mean, we talk about the other one. It's arguably a bigger name. But so Gary Graham passed away. Met him a couple of times at cons. Really nice guy. Much definitely a genre actor, I suppose. But he was in a ton of TV shows and always was sort of like that character actor where you were like, oh, that guy, you know?
Yeah.
But he played Detective Sykes on the Alien Nation TV show that was out for a couple seasons. He was in JAG, and then he was on Star Trek Enterprise as a Vulcan ambassador for like 12 or 13 episodes. So genre people absolutely knew who he was, but he was in a billion TV shows in like one episode. Remington, I'm just looking at his, you know, his Wikipedia page, but the Dukes of Hazzard, Remington Steele, Moonlighting, Hunter, like he was in a zillion TV shows. But folks, if you're like, who the fuck is Gary Graham? Like, if you look him up and you see his picture, you're like, oh, that guy, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely one of those actors. You know the face, but you'll never know the name.
Right. I had to be reminded of his name when it popped up in my newsfeed. And I just saw the picture. And I'm like, oh, shit, he died? And then I looked at the headline and I'm like, oh, that was his name? You know? It just didn't click right away, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that's too bad. He was only 73, which is a good run, but still fairly young these days.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So
he must have had the COVID shot.
Yeah, probably. Probably. It's fucking Pfizer, I swear to God.
All right. And the other one was director Norman Jewison.
Yeah. And he was 97. That's a hell of a run.
Yeah. But he did some great movies. Rollerball. Moonstruck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agnes of God.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Thomas Crown Affair. Yeah.
And one of the Sylvester Stallone movies I really like, Fist. Although I have to say, I was very disappointed. It wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be when I saw it.
I knew somehow we were going to get there.
Yep. Well, I'm just that obvious.
Yes, absolutely. I like it when you're predictable.
And he did Iceman, too, with Tim Hutton, which is a really good movie. Did you ever see that?
Did he?
Iceman?
No, I know the movie. I just didn't know that was him.
Yeah.
Is it real? I'm like, it's not. Oh, yeah, there it is. He was a producer on it.
Oh, producer.
That's why. Yeah, he didn't direct. So that's why I didn't see it on the chart here. But no, I do like that movie.
Yeah, I do, too.
That's an interesting. So, yeah, that's a big time name. But again, 97, you know, I saw some people were like, too soon. I'm like, too soon. I'm like, I mean, now, Scott, it seems like if there's a celebrity or famous person in their 90s, they're somehow that, like, if they don't make it to 100, people seem to get very upset.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, damn, 97. If I make it to 97, I hope that I can function at that age.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, at like a minimal level. I'm just saying.
Because I know when I die, people are going to say, not soon enough.
Or wasn't he dead already?
Yeah. Yeah. But, probably that one.
R.I.P. Norman Jewison. That's definitely a big name. Big time films.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations that came out Monday or Tuesday in a little bit. We have some movies that we want to talk about first.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that they were coming out Monday until I just saw a blurb on it come up through my Google News. And I thought, holy shit, already?
Yeah,
because it seems like they haven't been announced until February, mid to late February. But they came out Monday. And of course, there's been controversy about those, which we'll talk about. But one of the things that I said when I was talking about Saltburn a couple of weeks ago, I said it's either going to get a shitload of Oscar nominations or none. And I was right. It got none.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of get it. It's just one of those movies that would simply cement into the minds of the simpletons of the country. See, Hollywood's full of nothing but fucking perverts. So.
Well, yeah.
All right, so I saw Napoleon. Let's start off with that.
Okay. Really quick. And what did you think? Because I saw it a while ago.
Yeah, I loved the battle scenes. Those are some of the best battle scenes I've seen in a long time. It's just the rest of the movie that was just kind of... Yeah, and you're right about Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, he does a great job in it, but he's far too old. Yeah. I mean, Napoleon was only in his early 50s when he died, and he was... And Joaquin Phoenix was in his 50s when he made it. So, you know, there's a little bit of a discrepancy there.
Yeah, I agree. The very first battle, the Battle of Toulon, he was only like 23. The real Napoleon when that happened. Austerlitz, he was only like 26 or 27. You know, so, yeah, it was a little jarring.
And then the way it ended, it just kind of stopped. It was... I thought a fairly abrupt ending, and I'm like, well, that's it. Now I've heard, because this was a movie that was recently made for Apple TV, that the complete version is almost 4 hours, and it's a much better movie at 4 hours than it is 2.5. But I don't know that I'm going to find that out for myself. I will just take people's word for that.
I probably will, because I think we talked about it when I saw it, I felt after I saw it that it should have been more like an eight episode series or something, because how do you take the life of someone like Napoleon Bonaparte and condense it down to a 2.5 hour movie?
Yeah.
You know, and I get it, like, for time, like, there were events in the movie that were combined. There were events that were omitted. One of my biggest complaints was, and I hope maybe the extended cut explains this, is they never even mention, like, why Napoleon is even fighting all these people. Like, why is he fighting the Hungarians? Why is he even fighting the Russians? Like, why did the Napoleonic Wars even start? You know, they kind of just gloss over that. So we'll see. But I'm glad. The fact that you kind of felt the same way I did about it, you know, good movie, big spectacle, but was a little lacking, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Ridley Scott isn't necessarily known for his, dramatic chops, so to speak. Or he's more about action.
Yeah, and you can tell in the movie, you know, the sweeping landscapes and the spectacle and everything. Yeah, I agree.
All right, so you saw Barbie.
I did. I finally watched it. I am probably going to do like a whole video or a separate video about what I thought about Barbie, which I know is dangerous because as a man, I'm not supposed to have an opinion about this movie. Or if I say like the slightest thing negative about it, I will be mercilessly lamed. But I will say about Barbie, I liked it very much. I thought it was really a good movie all around. The acting, the visual, the writing. I thought a lot of it was very, very clever. And I don't mind that it was a message movie. I just two quick things about that. One, I think in some ways it was a bait and switch. Like all the promo presented it as, oh, it's just going to be a movie about Barbie and her adventures. So I can understand why parents who took their 5-year-old little girls to see it, that's not what they got. you know? And I know people who said that, like my daughters, like they liked Barbie and the costumes and stuff. And they giggled at like the rollerblade outfits and stuff. But that the movie, they really didn't get it, you know? So there was definitely a bit of a bait and switch. And I am not a sensitive, fragile male. So I have no issues with the message of the movie. I really do not. I just think it was a little heavy-handed. They should get an award for most uses of the word patriarchy within a 5-minute span. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
we get it. Like, and to me, at some point, you're insulting your audience. And this is when I think backlash happens. People would be more receptive to topics of like female empowerment and what it's like to be a woman in the world and all that. People would be much more receptive if we weren't beating you over the head with this all the time. Men are bad. Patriarchy's bad. White men suck. Okay. But so that was my thing. I liked the movie very much. I really thought it was good. But those were just my two little things about it. I thought my favorite thing about it was more the subplot of the relationship between the mother, America Ferrara's character, and her daughter.
Right.
You know, now you saw the movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when the reveal happens, spoiler alert, when the reveal happens that it was actually the mom that was playing with the doll, and that's what made Barbie sad, you know, and it was really the mom's feelings translating, I was like, wow, that I didn't see that coming, you know. That to me was the better part of the movie, was that whole dynamic of the mother and the daughter, you know. I thought that was really cool. And again, spoiler alert, Scott, the coolest moment for me is as soon as I saw Rhea Perlman, I knew that was supposed to be Ruth Handler, the creator of Barbie. And when she comes back, when she appears towards the end of the movie, that was fucking cool.
Yeah, that was.
So I encourage everyone to do some research about Ruth Handler and how she invented Barbie and started Mattel and what happened, because she was a very flawed person, you know. I encourage everyone to look at the history of Barbie, and it will make sense. That part got me in the feels a little bit. And yeah, the Kens were hilarious. Like the Kens were just hilarious. And Alan, that was great. And one last thing. I'm sorry, Scott, for getting long-winded. The scene where Barbie is upset and she says, I forget who she's talking to, one of the other Barbies maybe. And she goes, but she's crying and she's like, but I'm just not pretty anymore. And the narrator stops and goes, note to filmmakers, Margot Robbie is not the right person to cast when you're trying to make this point. Because even with red eyes and minimal makeup, she's still like the most devastatingly beautiful woman I've ever seen. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just not pretty anymore. I'm like, what? But I thought that was very clever that the movie was self-aware enough.
Yeah, you know? That's what I like. I should say
Greta Gerwig, you know?
Yeah.
To put that in there, that was fucking great. So that's my take on Barbie. Excellent, excellent movie. I understand why it made $1 billion. I do.
Yeah, I do too. And I understand why it's, you know, gotten all these awards and nominations and stuff. It's just, I mean, it's different than what you would expect for sure. But it was, you know, there was a smartness about it that you don't necessarily see in movies a lot anymore.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
All right, so the other one, another movie I saw was The Holdovers.
That is actually, literally, Scott, I swear to God, on my list for tonight.
Is it?
Yes, because I've heard so many good things about it. And I understand we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations, but before we do our prediction show, I want to try to watch as many of the Best Picture nominees as I can. Because up until now, I've only watched like two.
Yeah, same here.
So,
and I absolutely enjoyed the holdovers. Paul Giamatti, you know, deserves his nomination. The only thing I think Dominic Sasso, who plays the student that he ends up getting saddled with for most of the movie, really deserved a nomination. I thought he was absolutely fantastic, and it was his first movie. And I understand that Best Supporting Actor category was really tough this year because there's a lot of good performances, yeah. But his absolutely should have been nominated. However, I'm not sure that it's the best movie of the year. It's very formulaic. If you've seen, you know, one movie where there's a misunderstood adult saddled with a pain in the ass kid, you know exactly what's going to happen. And they're not that I expected any twists or surprises in this, but it just, you know, there was really no tension because you knew you could predict the ending from the very beginning of the movie. You know, it's, you know, just look at any of the other movies like that, Dead Poets Society or whatever. And you know what's coming next. But that doesn't stop you from enjoying the journey of getting there. The writing is really smart, but I want to talk about, and I guess, well, I'll talk about this with the nominations, but the supporting actress, and what is her name now? Hang on one second here. Dang it.
Divine Joy Randolph?
Yeah, Divine Joy Randolph. She stole this movie in every scene she was in. She was just incredible. Absolutely loved her. But as I said, it's just it's not the best movie of the year. I don't think. But the acting in it is so strong. It elevates what's pretty much an average script. Had any other actors played the parts, you know, that Giamatti played or Randolph played or Sessa played, we wouldn't even be talking about it.
Hmm. All right. Well, like I said, I'm definitely going to check it out tonight. I after I finished Barbie last night, I was going to then just immediately watch the holdovers. And it was already like 10 o'clock and I'm like, I'm never going to last.
Yeah.
You know, time to go to bed. I'll watch it tonight. But that's my goal is, and I've got some time, you know, we usually do our predictions towards the end of February. So
yeah,
I want to try to watch more of the nominees, before that. So, and then you said you saw Wonka, right?
Yes. Yes, I did.
All right. I'm sitting down and I'm girding myself.
No, I absolutely loved it.
Oh, okay.
I really did. And here's my critical takeaway of this, because mm-hmm. I know a lot of people saying, well, it didn't have the darkness of the Roald Dahl books or the darkness of the Gene Wilder movie. Well, no, it didn't. But do we really need that in every fucking movie? This movie just made you feel good. It made you feel happy. It was a lot of fun. The set designs and the art direction and the acting was all a lot of fun. What's his face? I keep wanting to say Jackman, but no. Hugh Grant.
Oh, yeah.
As the Oompa Loompa was a scream.
Well, see, that's the thing I liked least about. That's the thing I liked least about the movie.
See, I thought it was.
I found him to be great, totally grating. I wanted him to get squished.
I thought he was fucking hilarious.
All right.
I wanted to see more of him. I really did. It was a lot of fun, and it you come out of the theater kind of feel good. And, you know, you're right. When you start singing Pure Imagination, you get goosebumps.
Yep. And there are hints. They play a few notes of it throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And I waited and waited and waited. And then finally, there it is. And look, just real quick to touch on what you said. My daughter said the same thing when the trailer started coming out. Like, Dad, it looks too bright. And Willie is too happy and he's not dark or sinister. And I'm like, but Olivia, this is a prequel. He hasn't been beaten down and jaded yet. Remember, why is Willy Wonka upset? Why did he close the factory? Because everyone was spying and stealing his ideas, you know? So here he's still like bright and optimistic and wants to make a name for himself. And she's like, oh, I never thought about it that way. And I'm like, that's why.
Yeah.
It's got a different tone. And you can see it throughout the movie. Like when he, like the betrayals that happen to him and stuff, you can see like, oh Christ, like here's why that, you know, he becomes what he becomes. So I agree with you, man. There's an actual explanation for why the tone is different, you know?
And I will go out on a limb and say, I would love to see another Wonka movie, this time that bridges between Wonka and the Gene Wilder Willy Wonka movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it, you know? I will tell you what, Timothy Chalamet really grew on me. He really did. When he first kind of came onto the scene, I didn't really care for him, but between things like Call Me By Your Name, Dune, and now Wonka, I have a new appreciation for him.
Yeah, well, I've always liked him, aside from him being a cute little twink. he's just he's a really good actor. And there's another movie he's in that I can't remember the name of. I'll look it up as I'm talking. But he plays a cannibal in it.
Oh yeah. I didn't see that one. It's but I, god damn it, I know the movie you're talking about. It's really Bones and All.
What's that?
Bones and All.
Bones and All, yeah.
It's not really like a cannibal per se, I think. They're more like vampires that consume flesh as opposed to just people who eat other people for the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's about. I haven't seen it. So
it's I haven't seen it yet. But I will probably watch it over the weekend if I can find it somewhere. Because it just intrigues me. And that's more of an indie movie than anything else.
Yes.
But, I always thought he was a fantastic actor. I love him as Paul Atreides in Dune, and you know, that's coming out in a couple of weeks.
What is?
Dune 2.
Really?
Yeah, they moved up the date.
Dune 2 release date. You just... March 1st. Dude, for some reason, I didn't think it was till like November or December. Oh, I'm very happy now. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Oh, it makes me better. Feel better.
I can't wait to see it.
Excellent. Yes. Me neither.
Okay.
All right. Good stuff.
All right. So I guess let's talk about the controversy with the Oscars first. Margot Robbie was not nominated for Barbie, and neither was Greta Gerwig as director. And everybody made a big kerfuffle over that. And I think maybe one of the issues is this was one of those years that had surprisingly strong performances, and it was just a matter of whittling down the choices. I don't think it was a conscious effort on the Academy's part to not nominate them. I just think people
that's
had
blasphemy,
a lot of
dude. Choices. That's blasphemy.
I know. That's I know. Blasphemy.
Dude, I feel the same way. And in some threads on social media, the more rational among us said the same thing. I think the real problem, I don't think people would have felt it was a snub. First of all, let me talk about that word. Ladies and gentlemen, the fact that your favorite person or movie or song or whatever didn't get nominated doesn't mean it's a snub. You know, your personal feelings sadly do not factor into the equation. I know that's hard, a pill to swallow for some people, you know, but that's just how it is. But Scott, I think the biggest problem was that Ryan Gosling got nominated. So the whole movie is about female empowerment. Meanwhile, the dude gets nominated.
Yeah.
You know, now my problem is everybody is ignoring the fact that Lily Gladstone was nominated for Best Actress, first indigenous female to be so nominated, who was almost a sure-in to win based on her performance. I see very few people championing that. What else did I want to say about that? And America Ferrara from Barbie, a person of color, being nominated for Best Supporting Actress, completely glossed over.
Yeah.
You know, and Best Director, Justine Triet, who directed Anatomy of a Fall, a woman is being nominated for Best Director. And from what I hear, is an excellent movie. So you're right. Like, there's only 5 slots for Best Director. So the fact that Greta Gerwig, you know, I didn't see all the other movies, so I can't say. But of course, we have to cry sexism. We have to cry discrimination because it didn't go, you know, it didn't go your way or whatever. I don't know. And like I said, Scott, in my social media post, all of a sudden, all these people and a lot of friends of mine and indie film directors who consistently tell me that the Oscars are irrelevant and meaningless are suddenly very pissed off about the Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
Well, which is it? Do the Oscars mean anything? If they don't, then why do you give a shit who got nominated and who didn't? Because according to you, it's all self-congratulatory bullshit anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Or my favorite comment I saw yesterday, just a bunch of millionaires patting other millionaires on the back.
Right.
And I'm like, go fuck yourself.
You know, look, who doesn't like getting recognized in their field? You know, in computer science, we have awards. Like, there's a book, Who's Who in Information Technology.
Yeah.
I was in that several times. Like, who doesn't like accolades from their peers?
Well, it's Arkler.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, hey, someone noticed that I did something kind of good. You know?
Yeah, and here's the fact. You know, the majority of actors that are in the that are in the Academy are not millionaires. You know, the majority of actors barely make a living.
That's an excellent point.
So, you know, it's not like all of the nominees are just the ones who are voting. You know, the entire Academy is voting, and that's thousands of people. You know, and that's, you know, a lot of regular actors who will probably never get recognized for anything and barely make a living and probably are doing some side work. You know, I follow Matthew Labarto, I think the name is, from Little House on the Prairie.
Mm, yeah.
I follow him on TikTok. And he had, if you really want to hear some interesting stories about what it's like to be an actor, you really need to follow him on TikTok, because he has the best stories I've ever heard. Just, I mean, they're just fantastic. And he tells them in a very Paul Harvey way.
Mm.
because they'll tell the story and then there's always some kind of like a little twist at the end of it. And you're like, oh, holy shit. So definitely follow him. But one of the things that I get from him, and he was a big, you know, actor with Little House on the Prairie and sure. some of the movies he did as when he was a kid. But as happens, as he got older, the roles became fewer and farther between. And he had to pick up other jobs and do other things to make a living. And people just assume if you've been on television, particularly in a show like Little House on the Prairie, that you must be a millionaire and set for life. And that's just not the truth.
Oh, especially from shows back then, before yeah. residuals and syndication was even a thing, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Scott, I'll never forget, at one of the conventions I was at, I sat in on a Q&A with Matthew Lillard, you know, from Scream and Scooby-Doo and stuff. And he gave a lengthy kind of discourse on what it's like to be a working actor in Hollywood who's not an AAA lister, you know, because you have like the Tom Cruises of the world and then you have like the next level. And when he got done telling us like how much he gets paid per movie and how much gets taken out by agents and managers and publicists and what he ultimately gets to live on, everybody just sat there in silence, you know, because he even said, I know the assumption is that all of us actors are millionaires living this luxurious lifestyle. He's like, I assure you, we are not, you know? So yeah, you're 100% right about that.
Yeah. So that was my spiel on that. And these people who make stupid comments like that can just kiss my ass.
Dude, I don't even care anymore. The controversy, it was just today's outrage. Now it'll be quiet until the night of the awards, which are, I'm looking here, okay, Sunday, March 10th. And then people will be pissed off at who won and who didn't win, you know. And again, I follow it just like you do because we love movies and I still kind of dig the glitz and glamour of it all,
yeah.
you know, and I'm curious to see who will win. But my emotional well-being is not tied to a whole bunch of people that I will never meet.
Well, yeah.
You know, exactly. What I mean?
You know, as much as I think Barry Keoghan should have been nominated for Saltburn, the fact that he wasn't isn't going to ruin my day. You know, am I disappointed? Yeah, I wanted to see him win. He seems like a genuinely nice guy. In the interviews that I've been seeing with him and his co-stars, he just looks like a lot of fun. And you always like to see nice guys get their dues. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, you know, there are a lot of strong competition this year. Especially in the supporting actor. I mean, just, you know, you've got De Niro, Robert Downey Jr., Ryan Gosling, Mark Ruffalo, and Sterling K. Brown, who I'm not familiar with. I might know the face, but I don't know the name. I mean, just De Niro and Downey Jr. and Ryan Gosling in the same category.
Right.
That lets you know that's going to be a strong year. That's going to be a lot of competition right there.
And those are supporting roles.
Yeah.
Like De Niro, Downey, Ryan Gosling, and Mark Ruffalo are all leading men. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They will lead, carry a movie. And they're nominated this time around in supporting roles.
Yeah.
So now I'm looking at leading role, Bradley Cooper in Maestro, which I've heard is very good. Coleman Domingo in Rustin. I'm not familiar with that movie or the actor, to be honest. Paul Giamatti, who I've always loved. Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer. And Jeffrey Wright, who I really love, in American Fiction, so which I've heard is an excellent movie. So yeah, there's some powerhouse shit going on this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And people just really need to chill the fuck out.
Agreed. Oh, well. So we'll give it some time and then we'll do our annual prediction show.
Yes. Lily Gladstone really needs to win.
That's next on my list after the holdovers to watch Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, because that was one of the best performances I've seen in a long, long time. Just fantastic. And, you know, I really enjoyed the movie. I'm not sure that it's one of the best movies of the year either. But, you know, maybe I'm just getting a little bit more critical in my old age. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. So before we close out, I want to bring something up because I want to get your take on it. So I don't know if you have seen, you know, any news or anything, but so Kevin Spacey is going to be appearing next month at the Mad Monster Convention in North Carolina. And he's going to be the usual convention shit, signing autographs, photo ops and shit. Well, the world exploded when this news came out.
How can
Mad Monster book a sexual predator, you know? And I get it. Like, trust me, I it is not lost on me. But and I'm going to take so much shit for this, but I really don't know. I am nothing. I'm nothing if not honest, right? I did a bunch of online research, and everything I have found shows that Kevin Spacey was acquitted of all charges in every court case he has had so far.
Yeah.
Now, I think we know that not guilty in a court of law doesn't necessarily mean you didn't do it. But what other standard do we have, right? Like, if someone goes through the legal process and is found not guilty, what are we supposed to do? Say, well, we think he's guilty anyway, which is, you're right, I suppose. But I guess my question is, how do you feel about that, Scott? Like, just as a human being, do you have an issue with Kevin Spacey being booked at a convention?
I really don't. I think, you know, he was acquitted. You know, he hasn't been found guilty on anything. And if he had been found guilty on something, or even if it was maybe a hung jury or something like that, I might have some reservations. But, you know, the fact is, you know, he's walking free. You know, juries have said there, you know, wasn't enough evidence to convict him. And would people say the same thing if supposing Michael Jackson was still alive and he was at some kind of a convention? Would they say the same thing about him? You know, people can be very hypocritical. Now, I don't for a minute think that Kevin Spacey is the nicest guy in the world. And I do think there's probably some truth to his playing grab ass with people.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Could very well be.
But who hasn't played grab ass? Yeah, I hate to say it, but, you know, and I'm not proud of this, but there are things that I did when I was in my youth and in my early 20s that people would probably consider assaulting today, or harassment at the least, I should say, not assaulting. But nobody thought twice about it, really. It's just, you know, people have a different sense of morality now. There's a clearer sense of what people find appropriate and inappropriate that was not there and did not exist 15, 20, 30 years ago. And you really do have to put things in perspective, I think, sometimes. Now, I'm not talking like somebody full-on raping somebody, okay? Let's be clear.
Yeah, I think, that. Yeah, I got you.
I know you get that. But, you know, there may be some listeners who may not be putting that together. So I want to make that clear. This isn't, you know, like Donald Trump and E. Jean Carroll. I'm not talking about something like that.
We've all been at a party. We're hanging out. We're drinking. Maybe you like somebody. You want to try to get close. Maybe you try to kiss them or something. Then they push you away and they're like, oh, no thanks. And you're like, oh, all right. You know, and you walk away or whatever. You know, I know, I think rational people understand the difference, you know?
Yeah. And that's not to excuse Kevin Spacey or anybody, but how long do you punish someone, you know, for something that they have been acquitted of?
Right.
Yeah. You know,
right. My thing, Scott, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let people, like, if people are that upset, then don't go to Monster, Mad Monster. And if you do go, don't buy an autograph from Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's sitting there with no one online and the convention will say, gee, well, we really made a mistake with this one, you know?
Yeah, and you know that's not going to happen. You know he's going to sell out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But to me, Scott, look, I get so conflicted with this. And we've talked about it before. We still watch The Cosby Show. People still watch Roman Polanski's movies. People still watch Woody Allen's movies. Are we supposed to ignore, like, Kevin Spacey's work in movies? Like, Usual Suspects is still a great fucking movie. Seven is still a great movie. Am I supposed to never watch those things again because of accusations? And I admit I struggle with it. You know, I do. I do mental gymnastics with it, you know? So I get on one hand how people feel. And then again, there was like a day's worth of social media outrage, and then people will forget about it until Mad Monster rolls around. And then there will be people. Hey, I'm reporting here from Mad Monster. I can't believe the long line that Kevin Spacey has at his table. Why are these people supporting a sexual predator? Just wait. It's coming. You know?
Yeah.
It's coming. I guess people are entitled to feel that way, though. You know?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know, who am I to tell them how they should feel? It was just something that, like, flooded my news feed for a couple hours.
Well, I didn't see that. I wasn't aware of it until you mentioned it. But I was curious about what the price was going to be for his photo ops, and it's $225.
Yeah, I mean, that's about the going rate now for someone of that, like, stature. You know? That's just for the photo op? Or
yeah, just for the photo op. The professional photo op. There's no selfies at the table.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's about the going rate.
Yeah. And it doesn't say anything about autographs, just the photo ops. So
my
he
guess
may not
is
even be doing autographs.
No. Well, it says in the article, it says that he will be signing autographs.
Oh, okay.
My guess is it'll probably be about 100 or 125. My guess. I mean, if fucking Ralphie from A Christmas Story was charging 80, you know, for a signed 8x10, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Just one of those things. I was just curious as to your take on it. Like I said, I was rather conflicted about it. I get hate all the time for my opinions on things like this. Like, a lot of people are like, nope, Kevin Spacey is canceled. And if you support him in any way, then you're supporting a sexual predator. I'm like, oh, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I mean,
there's the unfollow button.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. But I felt that way about Louis C.K. too. Although, I mean, obviously he didn't go on trial or anything like that. You know, he just whipped it out in front of Tig. What's her face?
Oh, Tignataro.
Tignataro, yeah, just started masturbating in front of her. And then when she said, stop it, he did. You know, and then he offered what sounded like a sincere apology to me. You know, and he still gets pilloried. I talk about him being one of my favorite comics, and people still look at me like, yeah, but yeah, how long? You know, it's not Fatty. He's not Fatty Arbuckle. You know,
right?
he whipped it out. You know, and I don't get it. You know, people are so moralistic when it comes to others. As I said, you know, the hypocrisy. Yet when it comes to their own behavior, they somehow find the gray areas. So they think they can get away with it.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, and there we go. We somehow right always managed to fill up the time.
Yeah. Well, I knew we were going to fill it up today because there was a lot to talk about. And we didn't even do our Golden Globes this year. And last year we did a two-part show. We talked about it so much, we had to break it up into two shows.
Well, all I knew about it this year was that Joe Coy apparently bombed as host.
Yeah, and I didn't even know who he was, and I still really don't.
I knew who he was. I just wasn't a fan. And then I get told, well, you don't get it because you're not Filipino. And I'm like, and I'm not black either, but I still like Chris Rock.
Right.
I mean, what does that have to do with anything? I just don't find him funny. Now, maybe the humor isn't relevant because he does do a lot of Filipino jokes, but, you know, whatever. People do Asian jokes and I get them, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But, yeah. All right. Well, we can maybe briefly touch on it next time, but I really didn't care about the Golden Globes this time, to be honest with you.
No, I didn't either. I'd actually forgotten about it until I saw that they were coming up. So, oh, well. What have you got going on?
Well, we still have Return to the Theater of Terror is available on Amazon Prime and Vudu. You know, everyone who kept saying to me, when is it going to be on streaming? When is it going to be on streaming? Well, now it's on streaming. So all of you, do your indie filmmaker friend a solid and give it a watch. And if you do, I would ask that you give it a rating and leave a brief review. It helps a lot in building our visibility on the platforms. It really does.
Yes,
you know, it's funny. People will leave a 3,000-word treatise on Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. But to ask them to give us a star rating on Amazon is far too much work, you know. But it really does help. So give it a look. We do appreciate it. And if you're a filmmaker, submissions are open for Grindhouse Nights Film Fest. You find us on Film Freeway. Or on the website, grindhousenightsfilmfest.com. Our early bird rate lasts until the middle of February, and I think our submission fees are very, very reasonable. So submit your films. Scott is once again a judge this year. So we're looking forward to seeing your creepy little horror and exploitation films. So send them in.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I always enjoy being a judge. For Grindhouse Nights.
All right. What's up with you, my friend?
Getting towards the end of the second draft of Tree of Everlasting Sorrow. That's going well. I had a little bit of a hump that I got over, and I'm just excited to, I'm kind of like a pregnant woman at 7 or 8 months now. So I just got this goddamn thing out there. You know?
Yeah. Get it out of me.
Yeah. You know, this is really the nuts and bolts of writing. You know, doing a first draft is easy. You know, doing the editing and the second draft and stuff, and just even trying to make it presentable for an editor. That's where all of the pain of writing comes from.
Mm.
But I'm almost done with that, and then I will probably take one more pass through it after that. And you know, I'm enjoying it. It's as I said in other shows, it's shorter than the Heirs of the Flesh and Life in Amber, but it's certainly longer than Barbed Wire Kisses. So it's kind of in the middle there. And I think it's going to be a good, quick, fun read that people will enjoy. It's toned down, so certainly toned down from Heirs of the Flesh. But there's still my signature themes and grotesqueries that people have come to expect.
Yes.
Although I don't think I'll ever do anything quite as outrageous as Heirs of the Flesh.
Yeah, that was out there.
Yeah, that just was. It was out there like fucking Pluto. But that'll cool. be out beginning of the spring, and I'm looking forward to everybody reading that. But until then, you can get my other books on Amazon, and you can get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold, and of course, you can always get the audiobooks at audible.com.
Indeed.
All right. And so, until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.